Blog Talk Radio.
You know what? I'll tell you something. You know what's worse than 8 degrees in a negative 10 degree wind chill in beautiful New York City on a Tuesday night? Commuting 2.5 hours in an 8 degree weather and a negative 10 degree wind chill. Wow, what a day. Welcome to Seth and Sean. Yeah, it's been that kind of day. The things I do for our fans. Welcome to Seth and Sean. Usually we try and cover every sport. This is going to be a two sports show. This is football and college football. There's a reason I consistently say that college football is the best sport there is at this point. We'll go over that. Obviously, the NFL playoffs, we had 3 great games. 4th, not so much. Mr. Palmer, not a bad week. Considering how cold it was, thank God the football was good.
Seriously, well, if you're in Green Bay, I'm not sure the football could have been good at all. Because, man, from the last couple of days, having stood outside in 6 and 5 degree weather, imagine sitting out in negative 20 and watching a football game. And that's just, to me, that's incomprehensible. If you'd like to call in, 760-283-0846, and we're actually taking the best story about the cold. So if you'd like to bemoan the cold weather, please give us a call, and we will be happy to listen to you bitch and moan, and then we will commiserate, because quite frankly, I've seen some interesting posts on Facebook throughout the day. Did you see the lighthouse on Lake Michigan that's covered in ice?
I did not. But I will say, if there's anyone who knows bitching and moaning, it is Mr. Palmer. So
wow.
He is the expert.
Really? Wow. Oh, I'm not the one that started with a 2-hour ride, womp-womp. To make the show. That was you.
I thought that just shows how much I care about the show. That should have taken 30 minutes.
Only you think and, that. Anyway, you were absolutely correct. Last night typified what college football is all about. And I only got to see the fourth quarter. Really, I missed the whole first half and most of the third quarter. But the fourth quarter, it seemed like I got enough. I mean, that was an unbelievable game, which I thought Auburn was going to pull it out at the end.
I think we all did. After Trey Mason ran for the 35 yard touchdown with about a minute to go, it really did kind of feel like it was over in a lot of ways, especially after the kickoff return. Because if you remember, Kermit Whitfield had returned the prior kick 100 yards for a touchdown to give Florida State the lead in the first place, and then. Really, the key play was a 50-yard kind of slant where both defensive players hit each other and missed the tackle. Because otherwise, if that's a typical 10-yard play, I mean, you're really looking at 60 yards to go with a minute left. Once that play happened and they were at the 30, you kind of got the feeling that Florida State, I don't want to use was destined, because Auburn has obviously been called the game, you know, the team of destiny. Was kind of destined to win that game, especially when you have your best 6'5 receiver going against a 5'10 cornerback in the red zone, which usually doesn't result well for the defense.
Well, Seth, I'd go even further. If you look at the kickoff return for the touchdown, and Kirk Herbstreit did a great job of announcing this and pointing it out, everything that had to go right on that kickoff for Florida State did. So, first, the guy with the cramp, who I don't remember who that was, but there was a guy that went down the field that was trying to tackle for Auburn, and he pulled up with a hamstring cramp. On top of that, you had a guy that went in the wrong lane. And then, of course, the Florida, I think it was a wideout, right? The guy's a wideout. He's a really short guy. The Florida wideout, of course, chose the right hole. He could have chose any hole, and of course he went left instead of going right. Everything that needed to go right did. And, yeah, if you want to say that, you know what, Florida State was the team of destiny last night, So I agree with that, but they certainly had everything go right for them in the second half. After having everything go wrong in the first.
Now, they were blatantly outplayed in the first half to a point. And, I mean, Nick Saban talked about it. And I give ESPN credit, and I give ESPN a lot of grief. But ESPN did a really interesting thing with their telecast this year. They had six different ESPN stations going. They had the ESPN, normal ESPN with Musburger and Kirk Herbstreit hosting, doing the game. They had kind of a celebrity talk on ESPN2. They had ESPN News where they had coaches like Steve Adanasio from Boston College and Paul, I forget the last name, the coach from Pitt, doing analysis during the game. And it was really well done. But, one of the things they talked about was the fake punt at 21-3 that Florida State put on. And, people are lauding it, really giving it – I almost thought it was as strange as it sounds, it almost seemed like a no-brainer to me. They weren't doing anything on offense. I mean, Winston looked, for the first time, really looked flustered against a surprisingly tough Auburn defense, considering that considering they're ranking around 70. And they needed some kind of pump up, and 4th and 4 on your own 45 seems about as good a time as any. So I wasn't surprised by – I mean, you should be surprised by a fake punt. I was surprising. I was kind of expecting it almost. But it did kind of get them started. And what was funny was, as good a game as it was, and, we'll talk about the BCS in general a little bit later on the show, because obviously this is the last game of the BCS. There was not one bad BCS game this year. And this wasn't the best game. This wasn't the best game of the weekend. To be honest, it'll probably go down as one of the three best title games, along with Ohio State Miami in 2002 and the Texas USC game from 2005. A really fun game to watch. Two very worthy teams, and really great sports theater.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think the best part about this game was it was a game. Like, again, I didn't see the first half. Where you tell me, were they thoroughly outplayed? Like, did you think that this was going to be a blowout?
Yes. They were dominated. Okay. At 20, I will say one thing. The fake punt did change the momentum of the game. Because Florida State could not move the ball. And they ran the ball. I mean, they ran for a couple hundred yards. Auburn outgained them, I believe, and I don't have any of the stats open. I think they outgained them by about 100 to 150 in the game. But you kind of got the feeling at 21-10 that they were going to make a run back. The first half just wasn't that exciting because you have two teams that are blatantly pretty nervous. And, that happens in the Final Four. That happens in championship games everywhere, especially in collegiate ranks. So that wasn't really surprising.
Well, agree. But, Seth, in the fourth quarter, and granted, like I said before, I only watched the fourth quarter, so I can only give you an analysis.
Were you watching old school Raw?
No, I wasn't.
I have to admit, and if he's listening, he can call in and I will make fun of him about this. The owner of backsportspage.com, Randy Zellia, was tweeting, "Woo for old school Raw," and I said, "What sports fan?" Maryland was playing, so I watched a little bit of that, but of course they were losing, so it didn't really matter. But what legitimate sports fan is really going to say, "Yeah, I'm watching Raw right now"? They probably had an audience of 9. And as much as I liked The Million Dollar Man and Greg the Hammer Valentine when I was 12 years old, it didn't, this is a national title game. Come on now, people. So, although
absolutely.
My friend Evan may very well have been watching, so I probably shouldn't make fun.
So I was not watching Raw. Let's cut to the chase. Was not watching Raw. Did at one point or another tune to the Islander game, but I was sipping on some apple cider, so it was very nice. But in any event, apple cider and a little bit of rum, which is perfect. If you don't drink beer and don't really want hard liquor during the week, apple cider and a little token of rum goes a long way in this cold winter months.
Should you have an umbrella in that drink?
It's not. Okay. Mr. Kamens. Anyway. That being said, my comment about the game, which I didn't quite understand, was in the fourth quarter, aside from the one very, very long run that Auburn had, it looked like Florida State had solved the offense of Auburn. Didn't look like they had much going on. That was my issue.
I don't know if it was solved. I think what was happening, they just didn't have the – they play such a strange kind of offense. And people are talking about, you know, yeah, Gus Malzahn, the coach from Auburn, may be a candidate in Cleveland. And while I find his game fascinating, I don't know if it particularly transitions to the NFL. But what it does do, it actually – they ran the ball eight straight power runs with Trey Mason, who ran for 195 yards, and then afterwards apologized to the Auburn faithful. I don't really know why. For losing the game, because that was a brilliant, it was an extraordinary response. It was just an extraordinary performance by him and by the team in general. I think what happened is Florida State just kind of dominated the time of possession. Now, Jimbo Fisher gets a lot of grief for not really being an X's and O's coach, but the adjustment that they made at halftime really was significant that they went away from, because Auburn was getting great pressure on Winston. And pretty much what happened was Winston went to a quick shot offense where he wasn't holding the ball for as long a period of time. And you were able, you know, and so the pressure wasn't as much. But if you watch the fourth quarter, Florida State's Jerrigan, who's their big defensive lineman, all these guys are so winded. Because all they're doing is no huddle running, no huddle run, no huddle run. So it did exhaust them. I mean, Florida State's defense had nothing left at the end of the game. You know, I don't know if I agree that they had solved it, but it was less efficient than it was in the first half.
Well, they were getting a whole lot of pressure, and every time they tried to do the option runs, Florida State was in the backfield. Now, I'm not sure if that's attributable to Florida State. Florida State's tenacity on defense, or the fact that they were more well-rested, or just playing more talented. But it looked like, aside from that one run, Auburn could not do a thing on the last two drives, except for that one run.
They did have, I mean, Auburn did drive 80, I mean, even before the touchdown, drove 50 yards. They were just doing it in 3 and 4 yard chunks. The drive before, I honestly don't remember because I don't think they scored off of it. But it will be very – look, Cleveland, you know, as I said, Cleveland, now that Bob Stoops has announced he's staying in Oklahoma, you know, Malzahn is one of the favorites actually in Cleveland, which is pretty amazing considering 6 years ago he was coaching high school football. But I don't know if the game transitions, if his offense transitions to the NFL. And it's just because I just don't know. I just can't really tell. I don't know how – the way it's run now, I don't think it does. If he can transition outside of that, maybe he can, because he certainly is a brilliant, brilliant offensive mind. It was a fun game to watch. I'm sorry.
But, Seth, he reminds me a lot of what Oregon was running last year. And people said the same thing about Chip Kelly's offense, and that transitioned pretty well.
Yeah, because you have the stud running back in LeSean McCoy, which allows that. Cleveland doesn't have that. Number two, you have a quarterback who threw 27 touchdowns and 2 interceptions this year. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's an anomaly. You know, I don't see Jason Campbell throwing 27 touchdowns or 2 interceptions. Now, Cleveland doesn't have the offensive set. Now, again, I'm not saying –
Wait. But is it the offense or is it the talent? Now, Nick Foles is not the most talented of quarterbacks. He's not. You know what you get with him. And please don't tell me that Jason Campbell's going to be the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns next year.
No, but he's the only – right now he's the only quarterback for the Cleveland Browns this year, right now.
Right now they're all golfing. It doesn't matter.
Well, I understand they're going to most likely draft a quarterback with a number 3 pick, 4 pick, whatever it is. I get that. But as of now, yeah, will they? Could you see a guy like Manziel there? Yeah. And, I mean, Manziel, that was the best game. That was actually, I think, the best game of bowl season, the Texas A&M Duke game on New Year's Eve. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. Well, let me ask you, do you think Malzahn, you didn't see all of last night's game, but you saw some of the Alabama game. You saw some of, I'm sure you've seen some of Auburn throughout the year. Do you know if Malzahn's game transitions?
I think anybody's game can transition. I think if you're a good coach, you can transition. And there are not many coaches that don't transition well. It's the right talent in the right system. And in the NFL, that's a little hard to get everybody all at once. But like you said, LeSean McCoy certainly made it easier on Chip Kelly.
Yeah, and you look at the talent. You look at the talent in Philly. Now, even if you had Michael Vick is still probably an above-average quarterback or still a solid starting quarterback in the NFL.
Sure.
DeSean Jackson, although the idea that he now wants to renegotiate his contract after 2 years is mind-boggling, is a legitimate top receiver when motivated. You know, they drafted a tight end in Zach Ertz. The talent is there. Cleveland, you have Josh Gordon. You have no other real talent there right now. So I don't know what would work.
Well, I think that goes to what you're saying. Will Malzahn's system work? If they give him more than 1 year than they gave Rod Chudowski, then yeah, it'll work. But no college coach, in my opinion, is going to come in with extreme success when you don't have talent. It just doesn't work that way. The NFL doesn't work that way. I mean, even if you look at the biggest turnaround this year was in Kansas City. That's not all Andy Reid. That's because the talent that was all injured last year came back. That's because Alex Smith came over. Did Andy Reid have a good part in that? Sure. But that team with that talent, without Andy Reid, with any other coach, in my opinion, probably goes 7-9 or 8-8. They just lost all the talent last year to injuries. So does Gus Malzahn's system translate? I'd like to see it try, but they have to be willing to give him 2 to 3 years, maybe even 4, for it to work. Look, people didn't think Pete Carroll would make it back as an NFL coach, and he did.
Now, look, I mean, we can kind of go through. Yeah, we can go for every Pete Carroll. There's Bobby Petrino. For every whatever, there's Steve Spurrier. So some of them work, some of them don't. Just like everything else.
Oh, but there's a difference. There's a difference with Carroll. And there's a difference with Pacino, and there's a difference with Spurrier. Carroll, that was not Carroll's first job. I think
in the NFL, you're talking
difficult
about.
In the NFL, right. Carroll coached the Jets, and he coached the Pats, then went back to college, and then came back. Pacino never came back. That was his only job, was in Atlanta. And Spurrier's only job was in Washington. So, you know, I thought maybe as a high school coach, I don't recall who said this. I really don't. I'm blanking on the name. But somebody said, you know what, I like having Malzahn there because as a high school coach, you have to be able to adapt to having some years a 380-pound tackle and some years 175 defensive tackle. Some years you have a great running back. Some years you have a mediocre running back. You have to adjust to the talent. I think having Malzahn's experience in that, similarly Art Briles, I think they'll both be good pro coaches. I think it's just a matter of whether they want it or not. And I'm not sure Malzahn wants it.
Fair enough. Now, you have two big SEC teams. You have Auburn. You have Alabama getting absolutely waxed by an Oklahoma team that most people didn't think belonged in the BCS. Seven consecutive years of SEC championships are now done. And what I find interesting though is this is why I don't. And as I said, like when I gave ESPN credit, and you know for the broadcast, I thought, and this is where I kind of bring them down a bit. Now they're suddenly talking about how the gap is closed. Well, the reality is, if the gap is closed, and maybe it has, you know, they're saying about the end of the SEC is a better way to put it, as the best, which is ridiculous. You still have three teams in the top five. South Carolina ended up four. Missouri ended up five. You've got five teams in the top 15. I think people just overreact to things, I think, in the heat of the moment. And the SEC is still the best football conference, probably by relative. And I would still put the Pac-10, although they didn't have a very good football season, I would still probably have the Pac-10 number two. So
Seth, is it an overreaction or is it just a want for something new? And I think it's probably more of the latter. I think people when they get used to something, and I know I'm switching sports, but let's switch sports a little bit. When Michael Jordan won all those MVPs, he was still the MVP the year that he lost it to Karl Malone. Still the best player in the league. The voters wanted something new, so they voted in Karl Malone for 1 year. I think it's the fact that people are just sick and tired of saying that the SEC is the best conference in college football. I don't have a problem with people wanting something new. I just want them to look at it objectively, and I don't think anybody is.
Now, I mean, we should talk a little bit about the other BCS games because there was not a bad one in the bunch. Central Florida is one of those teams where they come in with nothing to lose, and there's no expectation. And a Baylor team that hasn't looked as good in the last month of the season should not be underestimating anybody. But Baylor kind of came in almost like Florida State came into this game, kind of just assuming they were going to win. And the problem is with the way UCF plays offense, Baylor just couldn't come back and won 52-42. You know, they have a new star in Blake Bortles. His girlfriend is now a model who's going to take like AJ McCarron's place, like his girlfriend's place as the hot model of college football player for the year. He had that. Stanford, Michigan State was as good as I thought it would be. And this is why, I mean, yes, the BCS, this is the end of the BCS, and people give it a lot of grief. And there have been bad choices with the BCS over the years, certainly. But at the end of the day, it's still, for the most part, put number one and number two together. Now, you may debate who's one and who's two, but that is still the main goal, correct?
Yeah. I mean, you got what you wanted in most of these situations. I think all the games are great. I think next year, because of the playoff, I think you're actually going to have teams that are – you're not going to have as much viewership. I just do. I don't think you're going to have as much hoopla over these games, and I think that takes away a little bit. We've discussed it on previous shows. It would be nice to crown a champion, but really, whoever won that Florida State-Auburn game was going to be the champion anyway. There's no dispute there. So, I mean, really, if Auburn had won, would Alabama have – well, Alabama lost. So, I mean, was there any dispute as to who number one was? No.
Really?
Florida State won. Is there any dispute? No. I mean, I think it did its job. I won't say I'll miss it, but I don't think I'm relishing the fact of seeing a 14 playoff. I mean, we've gone through this numerous times.
Yeah,
you've
been against it. I am for it, but not particularly enthusiastic. Like, it's not something – to me, there are a lot of bigger problems in college sports than whether you went playoff or stayed in the BCS. You know, the more I thought about it, the more I actually thought it did its job better than people gave it credit for.
You know, the interesting thing is that the one thing that you will be devoid of from now on is computer rankings.
Yes.
So if anybody was – and the interesting thing is because you're going to be devoid of computer rankings, now we're back to the whole subjective thing, which is what people wanted out of the equation to start with. You can't win. I mean...
Nope. You say you just can't make everybody happy.
Right. It's, okay, well, that didn't work, so we tried something else. Well, the other thing didn't work, so let's go back to the first thing. And that's basically what they're doing now. They're going back to two polls, except it's you have the AP poll, and then you have the selection committee, which is totally subjective. And I'm just interested in seeing how the playoffs ring out and how much transparency is going on in the room. Like, do we find out who everybody voted for? And if you do,
I hope so, but I doubt it.
Oh, by the way, because how do you? What's that?
Apparently, you're breaking up.
No.
So.
I doubt it as well, and I think the reason why I doubt it is if you're the Big 12 commissioner, I think his name is Beebe, Dom Beebe. If you're the Big 12 commissioner and you're part of that panel and you vote against Oklahoma being number four of the four playoff teams, you say, no, they're number five. How do you go back to your own conference and say, by the way, I didn't vote for my guy? Now, in the NCAA tournament for basketball, when they discuss a team, anybody that is affiliated with that conference on the committee has to recuse themselves. So I'm wondering if the same thing will take place. I hope it does. Because if it does, then you can have that transparency. And speaking of transparency, a good shift, but a minor one, today was the announcement of the Canadian Olympic team for hockey for Sochi. We'll get back to the football. Hold on. I promise we'll get back to the football, and I promise this will be very brief. And this past weekend, January 1st, we had the announcement of the American team, which Scott Burnside did a great article on ESPN about. Next week, we're going to have our hockey enthusiast and expert Keegan Reed on the show, and we will more thoroughly discuss that and do our mid-season NHL review. Now, sir, back to the football.
Now, if there's one thing I can't wait for, it is the mid-season NHL review. So,
sarcasm highly noted.
The one person we also should mention before we jump to the NFL is I said a little bit about the Texas A&M Duke game, which is one of the great comebacks, one of the great games you'll ever see. And for those of you who don't like Duke basketball, which is the consensus, kind of hard not to like their football team. You know, they play that gritty, tough style. And David Cutcliffe, who really, I give him credit, he turned down a job at Tennessee, which is a consensus top 15 program to run, to stay at Duke. Man, that guy could have a job anywhere. And they lost the game. And they lost the game because Johnny Manziel decided to put on just about the greatest performance you could ever ask for in a college football game. And for those of you, yes, he's going to leave, but for those of you who really question how much he cares about being part of the college football world, watch that game, watch the interview afterwards, watch his reaction. That kid loves college football. Now, he's no way in heck, there's no way he's staying. But credit to him and credit to him. And really a great, great game.
Now, Seth, before we move on, we now have a coaching vacancy in college football, and it's not Texas. So Texas, drum roll please, decided to hire Sean Thick, Charlie Strong, as their coach, which I believe I said on last week's show.
You did.
And now we have an opening at Louisville. Is it possible that Cutcliffe goes to Louisville?
No. Why would it? It's not a jump. He's going from an ACC school to an ACC school. I don't think he wants to go anywhere. I think the obvious choice to go to Louisville is actually the defensive coordinator for Michigan State, Pat Narduzzi. And yeah, props to you on the. He wouldn't have been my choice. Not because of a lesser caliber coach, because he's not. I think he's a heck of a coach, and I kind of like. And a lot, I don't know if his personality. You know, you look at the guys who've been really successful at Texas. In the last, there's two names that come to mind. Darrell Royal, and, of course, Mack Brown, who retired or was forced out or whatever you want to call it after 16 years last week. They are almost more salesmen than they were coaches. And that's kind of what – at a school like Texas, that's really what you are. You're a networker, you know, backslapping, you know, one of the guys, players, you know, people. I don't know if he's the right fit here. I also know that Texas was suddenly in a very weird situation, considering Art Briles pulled away, Jim Moore pulled away. So you were looking at either Bobby Franklin from Vanderbilt, who I don't think is ready. I don't think none of them are ready. He wouldn't have been my choice, or Charlie Strong. Now, Bobby Franklin is a better fit in that regard of the backslapping, kind of more media-savvy guy than Strong. Strong is a no-BS coach, which in a lot of places works. I don't know if that works in Texas. But I guess we'll see.
No, I'd agree with you. Look, it's going to be an interesting fit. He is as good a coach as there is in the NCAA. To me, I think that you're missing the boat on Louisville and their coaching situation. And I think the guy that's going to take that job is Bobby Petrino.
No. No way.
With one word, why not?
Because Petrino coached there before. And he left, didn't he leave in the middle of the night to go to Auburn?
No. He left after the season to go to he went to Atlanta.
No, there is no.
He went from Atlanta to wait. Now I'm really confused. Hold on a second. Now I gotta bring it up.
Or I think he was at Louisville, and pretty much took an overnight plane to Auburn to interview there after like a year, and caught so much grief that. No, there's no – Tom Jurich is one of the best ADs there is. I don't think there's a chance he goes for Petrino. I don't think there's a chance.
You are correct. After 1 year, Petrino secretly interviewed for the job at Auburn.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't take the job.
Yeah, but Jurich is one of those guys who kind of likes loyalty, and I realize that's kind of ironic considering his current head coach in basketball. But – you know, but Petrino's been there now for 10 years. Jurich is not the guy who's going to go back. Petrino's not going to be an option there, I don't think. Unless you read something, because I haven't looked at anything all day.
I haven't read anything recently. It was brought up in some conversation that I had with a friend of mine, and I really think that this is an option. I do. I mean, he's revered in Louisville. He brought that team to great heights. And including, I believe, 2 BCS games. So I wouldn't put it past them to go back to the well, because we all know Petrino's a good coach.
Wait. Petrino brought them to 2 BCS games? Louisville's been to 4 BCS games?
I believe so. He had 11 wins in 2004 and 12 wins in 2006. He went 4-3 in bowl games. He went to 1 BCS game. He went to the Orange Bowl. He went to the Gator Bowl when he was 9-3, and he went to the Liberty Bowl at 11-1. And the only reason he went to the Liberty Bowl was he was in Conference USA.
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty sure on that one.
So he went 41-9 overall in 5 years with Louisville. That's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah. I just don't see it.
You know he's back in coaching, right? He went 8-4 with Western Kentucky this year.
Yeah, no, I know he's back in coaching. I just find it very difficult to see someone who left under not very good circumstances, because he didn't leave Louisville under very good circumstances, and to go back to a school. I find it hard to see coach. I know it's happened. But I find it difficult when coaches come back, you know, you can never really go back again. You just can't.
Yeah, you don't have to tell me that. I mean, I tried it. So, yeah, I'm with you. Okay, that's just my pick. I think Petrino is the next coach. You obviously picked the Michigan State defensive coordinator, and we'll see who's right. So far, I'm 1-0, and so far, you're 0-1, so I'll take that way.
Yeah, you stick with that.
All right.
Transitioning to the NFL. So there were four games, and there were three of them were pretty damn good. I fell asleep during a little bit of Philly New Orleans, but I'll tell you that I don't even know where to begin. I guess where do you begin? I guess the disappointment. Has Marvin Lewis outlasted his usefulness in Cincinnati?
Yep. Yes. Do I think he'll be fired? No. Because Mike Brown loves him, and anybody that's stayed in a Bengal head coach for 10 years has made the playoffs for the last four. Remember, these aren't the Bungles anymore. These are the Bengals. I think that they look to draft a new quarterback, which is unfortunate because I know you love Andy Dalton. But I'm not sure if you caught the entire game or maybe just some of it. He looked awful. Absolutely. He looked shell-shocked for the majority of the game. Every time he made a pass, I was like, who is he throwing that to?
It was actually the one game I didn't see too much of. I saw part of the first half, and then the last 5 to 10 minutes, by that point, the game was over. Since he's a team I've rooted for going back to the Boomer Esiason days, so I do find it a little bit dispiriting. A game I thought was winnable, and then actually seeing them go to New England, and by the way, we had discussed the seeding, and you were incorrect on that. They do reseed based upon.
You are correct.
Lower, higher. A discussion that we had last week, this weekend while watching the collapse in Kansas City, or to quote Evan Lifton, the luck of luck. we'll get to that game in a minute. But I thought Cincy was a team that would have given New England a lot of trouble. And, now we have kind of an interesting game. San Diego, a team coached by Denver's offensive coordinator from 2012, a team that Denver's outscored by a whopping 1 point in two games this year. I don't think Denver's particularly thrilled with this matchup, to be honest.
No, I don't think either team, either New England or Denver is particularly enamored with either of these matchups. Because I think both of those teams could go on the road and win. I think Phillip Rivers has been the best quarterback in the last month, if not 2 months. And Andrew Luck, the luck of luck. When you have a guy like T.Y. Hilton running, catching 200 yards of balls, you don't need luck of luck. You just need to keep throwing him the ball.
Well, I think the other problem is he's playing against, for all intents and purposes, against Kansas City's second team defense. Because that team, they had nobody healthy by the second half of that game. That aside, when you come back from a 28-point deficit, now how they got down 28, I mean, considering Kansas City lost Jamaal Charles the second play of the game, is beyond me. It was an incredibly uninspiring performance in the first half by Indianapolis. But all credit to Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton and Donald Brown and the rest of that team. Because you kind of saw it coming. When Robert Mathis made the strip at 38-17 and they scored, made it 38-24, I think either very, very late in the third or early in the fourth, I think both of us kind of looked at each other and said, okay, this is a game again.
Yep, absolutely. Kansas City, you cannot fault Alex Smith for this. Alex Smith played as good a game as you could possibly have from a quarterback. I just think that the defense was either on the sidelines injured or they just didn't show up. I mean, the defensive line did not show up. They didn't get pressure on Andrew Luck all day. They just let him sit there and pick him apart. And as I said before, T.Y. Hilton carved them up in the secondary. And Donald Brown, where have you gone, Donald Brown? Well, Donald Brown may be a fantasy player next year. He certainly was a player on the field the other day. They don't need Trent Richardson, not when they have Donald Brown.
I'm not quite willing to go that far. If I'm going to base this, if I'm going to base fantasy football off of one game, Dwayne Bowe is a top wide receiver again, and that's just not acceptable. So, but going to the NFC, you had a game you kind of figured was going to be a classic in San Francisco, Green Bay, and it was. It was called. Why does Colin Kaepernick seem to be so much better against Green Bay than against anybody else?
Well, the reason he's so much better against Green Bay than anybody else is because he can use his legs that much more effectively. Green Bay didn't have Clay Matthews. They lost a replacement to Clay Matthews in the second half, and they were not able to contain him. And for some reason, Green Bay has not learned how to play the contain defense. It was just an interesting game to watch where you knew Kaepernick was going to come around and go around the edge. And you kept saying, watch the corner, watch the corner, watch the corner, and Kaepernick just was able to do it again and again. This was not read option. This was either straight run or just a broken play where he was able to run the ball.
A gallant effort by Green Bay. And, you did kind of have a feeling going into the fourth and then through the fourth. It was going to be, it sounds so cliche, but it's true, that whoever had the ball last was going to win the game. And I did find it fun. I did find, I guess a little ironic that the winning points came from a guy who in his 15th season was playing his first playoff game in Phil Dawson.
Well, but it was awfully nice to see the guy that was in his first playoff game make the field goal.
That is true.
I mean, after suffering 11 years in Cleveland, where they may never see a playoff game again, you really have to, the whole reason Jim Harbaugh got Phil Dawson was because he was sick and tired of the inconsistencies of David Akers last year. So they went out and spent big money, $2.5 million for their kicker. Man, $2.5 million to kick. If my knee was only good. And then they got Mr. Reliability. Phil Dawson is Mr. Reliability, and he was able to come through. Now, for those that were watching the game and were like, oh, my God, that kick was almost blocked at the end of the game, he was offside, and Hockley's mic just wasn't working. So if you didn't realize that, it wouldn't have mattered if it was blocked. You would have had another kick coming anyway, which would have been at the 23. So, chip shot for Dawson. Congratulations to Dawson. And now the two NFC teams move on.
Yeah, well, we should hit a little bit on the team that finally won on the road. And to be honest, if New Orleans was ever going to win a road playoff game, this was the game they were going to win. I think we both took, I know I took them. I think you did too.
Yep.
Philly has overachieved this year. And I thought they played, I thought Nick Foles struggled a little bit, but played relatively well. And it's hard to win in Philly, and Philly fans are certainly not the easiest. It's not an easy place to play. But New Orleans is a better team. And I did think the experience of New Orleans in the playoffs, having been there, several times over the last few years, including a Super Bowl win about 4 or 5 years ago, was going to help them a little bit. I think Philly has a nice future going forward. I think they need a little bit more before they're at that higher echelon.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think they definitely have the right players and the right mix, though. Defensively, I think they need a couple of more playmakers. But offensively, I think they have it. I mean, they have Jason Peters that's manning the line, who definitely came back from a horrific Achilles tendon injury, but came back strong, had an all-pro year. They have the wide receivers. Remember, they get Macklin back next year if they want him. He's a free agent, but coming off an Achilles injury himself, he's probably not going to get a whole lot of offers. They have Deshaun Jackson, the Riley Cooper. Riley Cooper, who made everybody forget what he said in training camp with a great year. Zach Ertz and Brent Taylor, two very good tight ends. Foles is your quarterback of the future. You got LeSean McCoy. I mean, their offense is set. Defense, well, they need to get pressure on him. They gotta get more pressure. And the question is whether Brandon Graham is going to be that guy. He seems to have been forgotten. And their safeties need some help. So I think that in the draft, they're going to go very, very strong on the defense side and hopefully get a quarterback who they thought was going to be Nnamdi Asamoah and just wasn't.
Yeah, well, Mr. Asamoah has gone in 3 years from a $60 million contract to retiring this week. Luckily, his wife is is pretty much the hottest actress in Hollywood. So, and he still had about $25 million guaranteed, so nobody's really crying too badly for him. So what are we looking at? You know, we have the four playoff games. We got the four games coming this week. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are that Carolina is going to have a very hard time this week. I like Carolina a lot, but I think them playing San Francisco is going to be an intriguing matchup, beyond intriguing. I think it's probably going to be the best game of the year. Definitely the best game of this weekend. I really do. A lot depends on whether Steve Smith is going to play or not. So far, indications are that he is. I'm going to take Carolina at home, but I wouldn't put it past San Francisco to win now and then win the next week because they look like they are on a roll. I think Carolina will win. I think going to the other side, I can't pick against Seattle this week at home, but talk to me next week because depending on how Carolina or San Francisco look, I don't think Seattle's as impervious to a loss at home as they once were. So I'm picking Seattle and I'm picking Carolina. The one and the two still make it.
I'm gonna disagree with you on one of the two. I agree that Seattle, since their loss, even before prior to their loss to St. Louis or loss to Arizona, excuse me, at home, which was Russell Wilson's first loss at home in 2 years, you know, they were down 21-3 to Tampa Bay. They haven't looked the same in the last month. Although I do believe, if I remember correctly, they looked good in Week 17. I just don't remember the specifics. I do like San Francisco going into Carolina and winning. I agree. San Francisco has looked very good the last month and a half of the season. I like experience in the playoffs. Not saying you have to have won a championship, but I like having been there the last couple of years. Obviously, the last 2 years, you know, they lost to the Giants in that NFC title game in 11, lost in the Super Bowl in 12 or whatever, 12-13. Carolina, I mean, how many guys from Carolina outside of Steve Smith have even been in the playoffs? Now, they may be one of those teams where it doesn't matter. They're a well-rounded team. They have a great defense led by Luke Kuechly and Kuechly. Cam Newton has really taken a step up this year. I don't know. I think I'll be honest. I think all these games are going to be really good. I do think New Orleans will give Seattle fits, although I don't think they'll win. But I do like Seattle-San Francisco game three, around three, I should say, next weekend.
Okay, so let's move on to the AFC, which has two very interesting games, which I didn't pick either one of them, and neither did you. So San Diego moving on to playing Denver. Phillip Rivers, like I said, one of the top quarterbacks in the last 2 months, has really, really picked it up and has put himself in that, I don't know, in that category of upper echelon to me right now. I mean, I think he's superseded Ben Roethlisberger. I think he's superseded Eli Manning now. I think he's up there more than he ever has been before. He's shown some moxie. And he's got the bolo tie, which is, like, perfect. So if he's wearing that to Denver. He goes into Denver, but I don't think anybody beats Denver this week at home. So I'm picking Denver in that game. I may be thinking a little bit more with my heart than I am with my head, but I think Andrew Luck pulls it off in New England. New England's just not the team that they were at the start of the season. They're not the team at the middle of the season. I know that Darius Hayward Bay got hurt last week, so Deion Branch, yes, the Deion Branch, is now playing for Indianapolis, but I just don't see Tom Brady being able to do it again. So I know I'm picking against Brady, who I believe is 11-7 in the he's 14-7 in the playoffs, but I'm picking against him, and you're going to see Luck going to Denver to face Peyton Manning in the championship, AFC.
As much as this hurts me to say, I actually agree with you on both. Yeah, that's just not that exciting for me. I think San Diego gives Denver a heck of a game. I think they're in a good role. I think Ryan Matthews has been surprisingly good, but consistent for the first time in his career. I love Danny Woodhead. I'm assuming New England is just kicking themselves for letting him go a couple years ago, although they have kind of an option with that with Shane Vereen. I want to take San Diego, but it's very difficult to really go against Denver in Denver. So I see a really good game. I see a game along the lines of 31-27 Denver. And I agree with you about New England. Look who they've lost in the last 12 months. Stephen Ridley's become a practical non-option. So LeGarrette Blount's their running back, who's not a bad running back. He actually had some good years in Tampa. Their tight ends have gone from Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez to, I have no idea. They lose Wes Welker. Danny Amendola has been injured, you know, on and off the whole year. Julian Edelman's been fantastic. But their defense, you know, Wolfolk's been out. Fikes is out. O.J. Mayo's out. Tlaib's been injured. They're just not healthy. And, you kind of look at Kansas City, what happened with their defense. You kind of look at what New England has. And, you know, this argument for 18-game season, nobody can stay healthy. I don't get it. And I kind of get the feeling in the, you know, I'm not going to do a team of destiny because I think that's a bunch of crap, to be perfectly honest. But there is something to be said against playing against all these second-team players. And I'm going to go with Indy as well. I think they win. I think it's a 26-20 kind of game. I think all these games should be pretty close. Seattle's not playing well enough, I don't think, to blow out New Orleans. And you know, we've already talked about San Francisco, Carolina. So I think we're looking at, at the rematch of Luck versus of Manning, although neither Luck nor Manning really want to discuss it in that regard.
No, nor should they at this point. I mean, let them figure that out next week before we get to this. But, yeah, I think those are your teams. And then we have some pretty good matchups in the championships. I mean, you got Luck going to Denver, and you got Carolina going to Seattle, which, at least for me, Carolina going to Seattle, and those would be 1-2 and 1-4. So 1-4, 1-3, 1-4. No.
What are you talking about, the seed?
What seed is Indy? Are they 4 or 3?
Indy is the 4, and San Francisco is the 5.
Right. Well, I don't have San Francisco moving on, so that's fine with me. So anyway, last 5 minutes.
So you want to talk quickly before we get to our whatevers? You want to talk about the implications of the Luol Deng trade?
Implications of the Luol Deng trade. Well, Luol Deng got traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers last night for a protected first-round pick, Andrew Bynum, and 2 second-round picks. Implications are Chicago saves money, Cleveland gets Luol Deng. That first-round pick may never be a first-round pick. It's actually Sacramento's first-round pick, top 14 protected this year and top 10 protected the next 2 years, and then it becomes a second-round pick. So basically you're banking on Boogie Cousins being good.
Good luck on that.
What's that?
You're banking on Sacramento making the playoffs. Good luck on that. And also,
right, in the next 3 years.
And also,
so basically, basically Chicago saved $17 million making that trade, and hopefully Cleveland will, I don't know, move from 12 to 8 in the seeds and become first-round folly for the Miami Heat.
Yeah.
That's all you're getting out of this.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, Deng turned down a 3-year, $30 million extension with Chicago. They're not – what did you say?
I didn't say anything.
My fault. They're not going to – so they didn't think they were going to re-sign him. You're already kind of cap-strung this year because of the last year of Carlos Boozer's contract. They're conceding that without Derrick Rose, this team isn't going anywhere this year. So you take the deep breath, you pick up some draft picks, you accumulate some assets, and you try and put together something where you can pick up a second superstar. And as good as Deng is, he's not a superstar. Cleveland needs to make the playoffs, period. They have to keep Kyrie Irving interested enough to want to come back next year, want to sign an extension in 2015. I'm not sure this is the deal to do it, but it's a start. So we got 3 minutes left. The floor is yours.
I'll be very quick. I said this on our website, and I'll give props out to our listener and to our statistician extraordinaire and great musician, Evan Lipton. Congratulations on your release, sir. If you have any interest in hearing a great saxophonist, please go to our website, go to our Facebook page. You can download his music, pay for his music, support the arts. We like to support the arts, radio, music, et cetera. Great friend of the program and great musician. So listen to his music, and it's wonderful. Congratulations, Evan.
Props, Evan. We're all proud of you and can't wait to hear it. Too bad the listening party was a little bit far from both of us to attend. Two quick things. A sad, I don't want to say farewell, but Lindsey Vonn, who's pretty much going to be the golden girl of this year's Olympics, is officially out because of her torn MCL. You know, the Winter Olympics have a lot of trouble drawing specific superstars anyway. And Vaughn is one who's well-known, kind of in the celebrity scene for all intents and purposes, but really an extraordinary athlete and someone who was working extremely hard to get back after tearing her ACL. And then being re-hurt a couple months ago, she just wasn't able to fully come back, so she's officially out of the Olympics. And she'll be missed from pretty much all levels. The other one I wanted to kind of take a step back on, we talked, we did a Hall of Fame show on Saturday. It was a discussion with Mr. Palmer in the Bate Isles, who has come on the show from time to time and who I host a TV show with a few times a year. And we talked about Hall of Famers, and when Backsports Page, the real website, comes back up, which we're hoping is sometime before the end of the millennium, you'll be able to listen to it, and it's really a good show. But we were debating people who were not really – we were debating 50-50 players. And I just got home, and I come across this headline. Greg Maddux will not be a unanimous Hall of Famer. Now, I'm not quite sure how you decide not to vote for Greg Maddux. But Ken Gernick, who's a Dodger beat reporter, has decided that he will not vote for anybody who played during the PED era. So let me see if I get this straight. Because of Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire, we're not going to vote for Derek Jeter. We're not going to vote for Mariano Rivera. We're not going to vote for Roy Halladay. We're not going to vote for Greg Maddux or Tom Glavine. Who are you? So the only person you're going to vote for is Jack Morris.
Who played in the steroid era.
And you didn't vote for him 2 years ago. Last year you voted for Lee Smith, you didn't vote for anyone. You voted for Morris in 2011 and 2013. You voted for for Lee Smith in 2012. I don't know. We have 10 seconds, so I don't even have time to finish. But really? Maddux is who you're going after? Well done. For Sean Palmer, Seth Kamen, Seth and Sean Sports Radio, have a good night, everybody.